With this meditation, we finish our week about the Passion of the Lord. And so we are accompanying Jesus in Calvary, in his crucifixion. He's been crucified. And just a reminder, we want to make his feelings our feelings. We want to feel this compassion. And we ask to... We ask from God the grace to let us into this mystery of salvation and of love that he is having. And as I was seeing that with one of you, sometimes it's difficult to see the cross, and it's difficult to be here in Calvary because it's difficult to believe that this is done for me, that this is exactly the measure of God's love towards me. And as I said before, we have to confront the cross. We have to confront the cross because if in truth, what we want in our spiritual life is to grow in the understanding of his love for me, which is like a grow in humility, then we have to see how much he loved me. And Jesus says in the gospel, no one has a greater love than him who gives his life for his friends. So this is the greater love. What we are contemplating now is the greater love. And we are doing this in the real Calvary. Because even if we were now in the Holy Land, and we have to pray for the Holy Land, because right now the Holy Land, as we speak, is being bombarded. So as we pray for the Holy Land, we see that this is the Holy Land. This altar is Calvary. And this is really happening because we are connecting mysteriously with a real event, with the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And in the Eucharist, we celebrate the memorial of his passion. So some ideas that can help us to go into that mystery and to make his feelings our feelings. So the first idea is, if you want to stay in that idea that I just said, God loves me and God is showing me his love through that cross, you can go to Psalm 8 when it says, what is the man that you think of him? We can go to that psalm and you can just stay in that psalm as you contemplate Jesus in the Eucharist, and you just stay there if you want to, and if you want to go no further, because this contemplation, this meditation is just to see how much God is loving me. So Psalm 8 says, it's actually a very short psalm. O Lord, our Lord, how awesome is your name through all the earth. I will sing your majesty above the heavens. And then it says, when I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you set in place, what is the man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? And then instead of contemplating the heavens and asking in the work of his hands, the creation, and we say, oh, who am I that you do all this for me, that these mountains, like St. Francis said, these mountains belong to me, these rivers belong to me, these flowers belong to me. But now I see Jesus Christ crucified, and I ask myself the same question, what is man that you are mindful of him? And a son of man that you care for him. Yet you have made him little less than a god, crowned him with glory and honor. You have given him rule over the works of your hands, put all things at his feet. And that's what he has done through his crucifixion. And so let's hear what Jesus Christ is saying from the cross. And he is saying, Father, forgive them because they do not know what they do. That's interesting because if you go back in the gospel and you hear that parable or that he is using for the vineyards, for the vineyard and the administrators of his vineyard, that he says, I'm going to send people just to collect what they owe us because it's my vineyard. And then they hit them and they mistreat them. And then he thinks, well, I will send my son, at least for my son. They will respect my son. And it's like, hey, he is the one who inherits everything. If we kill him, we keep the vineyard. Let's just kill him. So, and then the Pharisees got angry because, according to the gospel, they knew that he was referring to them. So how can you say, Jesus, that they did not know what they, that they do not know what they're doing, if it was clear that they did? So, but Jesus is also inviting us to see the difference between what we are doing and who we are. And even those Pharisees were created with love. And Jesus thought of them and just called them into existence by the name of each one of them. We kind of put the name Pharisees a little bit like to make them anonymous and evil. But they're not Pharisees. Each one has a name and was always loved by God. And he did everything that he could to move those hearts. But with human beings happens something that is very different than what happens with angels. Angels, because they are not reasoning, they have an intuition, and that's it. That's their pure intelligence. It's different than with us. We need, because we are in time, we think in time, major, minor, conclusion, major, minor, conclusion. And it takes time to pass from one place to the other. So we are intelligent beings in time, so we think like time works. We think in steps. The angels don't think in steps. So if the angels say no, it's no. But we say no, or maybe yes. Oh, I changed my mind. That's very human. And God is waiting that from those Pharisees. They're still breathing. There's still a chance. They can just change their mind. And it's like, what can I do for them to change their mind? It's like, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. Touch their heart. Maybe if you touch their heart, they will just reconsider. And maybe some did reconsider in the last moment. No, just like, remember the story of Maria Goretti. I just love to say that story. It's like, this 15-year-old peasant girl who is living outside of Rome with his family. And there are many families of immigrants. I mean, they live around Rome, but they come from another region of Italy. They come from Lombardy and Veneto. And they go there because Mussolini didn't want one single region to have one type of Italian so that they just can't get together. And so he was like distributing them all over Italy, like in France before, it's the same thing. So we don't have regions anymore. So those families kind of knew each other, and the boys and the girls were friends. There was this girl, she was like 14, 15 years old, and it was in that circle, this boy, Alessandro, he was 19 years old. And Alessandro got crazy and he wanted to sexually abuse Maria Goretti. And he found the right moment and he entered the house and she's like fighting, and God gave her supernatural strength because he was much stronger than her, but he couldn't. He really couldn't. But the interesting thing is that the cries of Maria Goretti were not, leave me alone, what are you doing? Go help, go get out of here. She was crying, Alessandro, don't do this, you'll go to hell. So she was thinking of him. Like, I don't really care about myself, but if you do this, it's bad for you. It's much worse for you than for me. because you lose the grace of God. I lose my virginity, you lose the grace of God. So he valued more his state of grace than her own virginity. But it never happened. She defended herself. But in anger, because he couldn't rape her, he stabbed her with a knife 7 times. All over. And she survived. I mean, she was still alive. Even an ambulance took her to the hospital. And he fled, but he was caught. He went to prison. And in the hospital, they had a problem with the anesthesia. So apparently the surgery was more painful than the stabbing. So she fainted. And when she came back, her mother and the priest were at the side, the two sides of her bed. So she comes back and she says the word Alessandro. And of course, the mother and the priest, they react. And it's like, that slimy piece of worm, you know? That devil and she's like looking at them like this, like, what are you saying? Like, but I forgive him. That's the first thing that she says. And then of course the mother is like, wow, what did I hear? Did I hear correctly? And then she says immediately after, I have prayed that he will be with me and right next to me in paradise. That was her prayer. That he be at my side in paradise. And then shortly after, she died. And Alessandro went to prison, and he had a very bad time in prison because, you know, the inmates, they kind of know why are you there? And they didn't like it at all. So they made his life pretty difficult, as if it was not enough to be in prison than to have the inmates against you. Well, that happened to him. And he came out after his time. He did his time. And when he came out, everybody, like, hated him. Nobody would give him a job. They made the life impossible to him. And as last resource, he came to a place like this. He came to a friary, Franciscan friars. And then he asked if they could give him a job or something. And they did give him the job to be a gardener. He was working in the gardens of the friary. And people passing by, they would just throw garbage inside of the garden just to make it difficult for him for years and years. So his life was penance. But he grew in sanctity. And it just happened that Maria Goretti was canonized by Pope Paul VI when her mother was still alive. So her mother went to St. Peter's Square to see the canonization of her daughter, a little bit like the mother of Carlo de Acutis, which is very strange. And Alessandro was there too, sitting in the same row as the mother of Maria Goretti. So the question here is, the whole story of Maria Goretti, is this story of the love of God towards Maria Goretti? Or is this story of the love of God towards Alessandro? And that's a very deep question. So who was the main character in this whole story? And Maria Goretti would say Alessandro. Because she would say something like, by the grace of God, he's my best friend. And I've been with him. That was shortly after her first communion, what happened. It's like, I have always been her bride. But him, he was in the darkness. So you see, Maria Goretti was a victim for Alessandro. Because God loved Alessandro. And there's something about that we just don't want to accept. No, there's something. It's like, okay, if you put it like this in the story of Maria Goretti, but in our everyday, no. That person, you know, that person you're thinking about, like, no. No. And Jesus is saying, forgive them because they do not know what they do. That's a whole new perspective. And you cannot really go deeper into that, if not in a meditation where you're contemplating Jesus Christ suffering on the cross. And that's why I said at the beginning, we don't want to look at the cross because we're afraid to see how much God loves us. And then things like that come, things like Maria Goretti. And then, you know, Jesus is there on the cross, and Mary is there, and John is there. He ran away with the others at the beginning, but then he just felt sorry, he repented, and he came back. And so he was standing right next to Mary, the cross. And he sees Mary, and he tells Mary, look, he's your son. And then he looks at John, and he says, look, there's your mother. Like, independently of the difficulty that it is to speak any word when you're actually crucified, that just to breathe is so painful because it is in breathing that you do effort with your nails. So actually you have to make more pain in order to get a little bit of air. He uses his air, the little air that he has available. He can just use it to survive. But no, he just manages to get words out of his mouth. It's like a great effort. So what he is saying is really important. It's even more important than in Last Supper. It's really his last testament. He is really dying. And he says, here's your son and here's your mother. Now, some of you know that I read history gladly, and I've read some history, military history of the United States. So you read about these battles, and then you read in different wars and in different battles that it always happens that when the soldier is hit, and you know, like something is terrible, like part of his body, and he knows that he's gonna die, or the pain is terrible, he's about to die, he just says, "I want my mother." They call their mother. I mean, when you know what they call the mother, they're about to die. I mean, it's like, because there is no moment to be, you know, macho. So it's like, I want my mother. So you just think of this. And this is really, Jesus Christ is dying. He is dying. So it's a moment in which instinctively you want your mother. And in this moment, he gives his mother instead of taking it. That's godly. That's not human. He's so generous. He is giving us his mother in the moment in which he needs her the most. He is giving her away. And he loves you so much that he gives you his mother in those conditions. Tell me, how am I not supposed to defend her in the room of the Immaculate Conception? It's like, Jesus suffered a lot to give me his mother for you just to say it's a symbolic thing. She's not really a virgin, or she's not really Immaculate Conception. What do you think you are? And then he says, I thirst. And it's curious because I've had the grace in the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, I don't remember, but more or less every month, sometimes every 2 months, I get to go to drive very early in the morning because the Mass is at 7 to the Bronx to celebrate the Mass for the Sisters of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, for the Missionaries of Charity. They have their house in the Bronx. And I think it's the biggest community in a single house that they have in the United States, the one in the Bronx. So it's a real privilege to be able to celebrate the Mass for the sisters once a month or once every month and a half. And it says, I thirst, in all their crucifixes. It's part of their spirituality. I thirst. And I was telling the sisters, you know, sisters, and Lisa is not here, so there's no doctor to check on me on what I'm about to say. When we drink water, the water is assimilated in the blood, and that's why I was interested. I said, what's the relationship between blood? Because blood is for me so important, because we're like drops of blood. What's the connection between water and blood? And it's apparently when you drink water, it goes down to the intestine, and then there's a part of the intestine that it's called the jejunum. It's like it's the same word for fast, but this jejunum is in our intestine, and then it just goes somehow through the jejunum into the bloodstream, and the bloodstream controls the quantity of water, because the quantity of water controls the pressure of the blood. So it's good to have a good blood pressure, because if the pressure is not enough, the blood doesn't reach all the parts of your body that need to be reached. It doesn't refresh your whole body. So it is obvious that Jesus Christ was losing blood, and then there were parts of his body that were not getting touched and refreshed. And it's almost like I said, I need water because I need to pump water. I need to pump blood, and I need to live a little bit longer. I need my members to live a little bit longer. I still have things to say. I still have to pray. And it's like, Jesus Christ, you know that you're not gonna survive this. You already passed the point of going back. You're not gonna live. Just let yourself go. No. I thirst. He says, I thirst. And it's curious, because I was telling the missionaries of charity, and I know why you have this I thirst. Because the water that controls the pressure is the charity. And you're just telling people, like, give us the means that we need to help those people. We'll put the charity, and then the blood will have its right pumping. I think I said it in another way, because they liked it, and I'm not really liking what I'm saying now. But anyway, they liked it very much. Actually, after that, they invited me to preach their spiritual exercises in this summer for the whole territory in Washington, D.C. And so I'm very honored. But the point here is that when they say, I thirst, when Jesus Christ says, I thirst, he is asking for charity. Because he is asking for her blood to reach out. And then you can be as much as a drop of blood as you want. But if there's no water, you won't get there. You can be even fresh. You can be even pumped by oxygen. But if there's no water, there's no pressure, and you don't get there. So we need charity. We need that flow. We need that blood to flow. And to flow hard. It's right pressure. Jesus needs that. And then, you know, St. Paul is, you know, it's our patron of the Legionaries of Christ. And from all the things that I admire Paul, and I told you that the letter of the Ephesians is my favorite letter, and his insights of theology, and much of the things that I preach about, they come from St. Paul. But I think there's no moment of St. Paul so beautiful like at the end of his letter of Timothy, when he says, they all left me. There's no one here. And it's curious, he is the apostle of the church, and all the famous Saint Paul, baptized so many people, went to so many places, and now he's about to die. And nobody is with him. And I really like that moment of Saint Paul, because Jesus is telling him at the end of his life, you know, the greatest thing that you've done for me is just being with me here when I am alone and I am suffering in the cross. So if you haven't done anything in your life, but you have been with Jesus consoling him at the foot of the cross, you have done enough. Because that's all what he wants. You remember that message to Saint Maria, Margaret Marie Alacoque, the Sacred Heart of Jesus. At least you love me. So that's all that he wants. He just wants love. Oh, there's so many priests, so many lay people leave the church in Germany. The thing is that in Germany, you are officially inscribed in the register. And if you're not inscribed in the register, you don't have the right to get married or to get baptized or to get any sacraments. So everybody who is Catholic is inscribed. And also they pay taxes for being in the church. So it's like a different system. Many of us just don't understand it, because sometimes you are literally excommunicated because you're not paying the taxes. But you're not excommunicated if you say that Mary is not the Immaculate Conception. So it's kind of strange. But the thing is that the parish priests know exactly who is leaving the church, because they say in the letter, "I renounce. So I am not paying taxes anymore. I don't want to belong to the Catholic Church." And they have to send the letter to the parish. So I had friends, pastors in Germany, and it's like three just today. And it's like every day, three, five, one, two, five, two. Like leaving the church every day, every day, every day. And it's, yes, and then you see that loneliness, no, of Jesus, and you share that loneliness. But what I wanted to say with that is that apparently, I mean, I can understand when they leave the church, because from a bishop conference of 33, 30 don't believe that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. Like, literally. It's like, it's true. And everybody in Germany will tell you that's a fact. So you say, you know, of course they are leaving. I'm leaving too. But then you see Jesus Christ on the cross, on Calvary. You kneel before him. And you say, Do you like me? Like crucified, like with my crown of thorns, you've seen the Holy Shroud of Turin. It's like full of holes, like from the lashing and everything. He's destroyed, Jesus Christ. So he doesn't look good at all. This is just like a silver Jesus, like you don't see any wounds. He is in a terrible shape. It's like, no, Jesus, I don't like you at all. Like, yes, you know, my body is my church. Like, yeah, you can tell. It's terrible. It's full of wounds. Yes. If you leave, you leave me with a new wound. If you stay, you console me, because I'm staying. I'm taking it. It's very hard, but it's also, it makes us so powerful. Because if we persevere in our marriage, if we persevere in the grace of God, if we persevere in our family, and if we persevere in duties that we don't like, but we know that we have to be there. It's like, Lord, I'm just staying here because you're staying here. The moment in which you leave, I leave. But you're not leaving, apparently, so I guess I have to stay. And that makes you so strong. Because then you give a meaning for your being there. And we don't live in a perfect world. We don't live in a perfect church. Nothing is perfect. Jesus is crucified. But Jesus is real. And Jesus is longing for your love. And he needs people that love him. Because there are so few of them. Like Saint Teresa of Avila. She was having this conversation with Jesus crucified. And then it's like, Jesus, this is so hard, the life that you gave me. This is so, so hard. I'm suffering so much. And then Jesus from the cross tells her, don't you know that I treat like that my friends? And he says, therefore you have so few. It's far true. It's partly true. Yes. And so I leave you with this thought. And take the one that helps you the most. Just stay there. The most important thing is that you stay with Jesus because you want to console him. And also the other important thing is that you are understanding that he is going through this because he loves you.